This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 10th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear about an exhibit at Boulder's Fraser Meadows that celebrates the past, the present, and the future of the Latino community in Boulder County. Then we'll turn to a newer art form nurtured by street culture and hear how breakdancing crews are mentoring the next generation of acrobatic dancers. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. Today's science show looks at brains in space, bike paths and critical wildlife habitat, climate grief, and the upcoming Gold Lab Symposium on the science of big data, biology, and health. At 9 a.m., Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Colorado lawmakers still have 240 bills awaiting resolution as the legislative session is scheduled to draw to a close midnight Wednesday. The Denver Gazette reports the backlog is worse in the House as lawmakers there have 150 bills remaining on their agenda as of 3 p.m. yesterday. House Republicans have been contributing to the backlog by filibustering, asking for bills to be read at length, and also seeking amendments for some bills to be sent back to committees. To shake the gridlock, House Speaker Alec Garnett told Colorado Politics he has threatened the use of a procedural option, which limits debate on any bill to no more than an hour. If used, the House leadership still faces the problem of having more bills than hours left in the legislative session. As of yesterday, among the major bills or issues facing gridlock are felony charges for possessing fentanyl, including unknowingly possessing the substance, a statewide recycling program, and requirements for reporting and monitoring hazardous air pollutants. Facing pressure from dueling interest groups, Colorado lawmakers quickly passed legislation last week, which aims to ease the burden of higher property taxes by capping tax values for the next 2 years. Officials project the bill will cut property taxes by $700 million during the 2023 and 2024 tax years, with the state absorbing the revenue loss for schools and local governments who are dependent on property tax revenue. Conservative and liberal groups were threatening to pursue a range of ballot initiatives that included asking voters for deeper property tax cuts, caps on property valuations, a new property tax fee for homes worth above $2 million, and blocking revenue loss for schools and local governments. According to the Colorado Sun, negotiations between lawmakers and interest groups reached a climatic and sensitive peak last week when those involved asked for notarized statements or promises before agreeing to back down. Colorado Public Schools, who were added late to the list of institutions using Native American mascots, may get a one-year reprieve from paying fines. KGNU's James Swenson has more.
Tonight, seven schools are in danger of being added to a Senate-passed bill to remove American Indian mascots from Colorado school districts. If they don't agree to change their mascot, each school could face $25,000 in fines each month. David Cruz, superintendent of the Sangre de Cristo School District in Mosca, explains, "If you're going to put us on there this late in the day, give us a little time to make the changes. If the Colorado Commission of Indian Affairs adds any of these Thunderbird schools to this list of offending schools, they would have no more than 2 weeks to come into compliance. This would include the removal and replacements of everything from jerseys to banners and marquees. The bill doesn't include any language to extend the correction window for schools with questionable mascots added after 2021. CCIA Executive Director Catherine Redhorse will lead a May 19th discussion to determine the outcome of these seven schools and decide whether or not and when they should have to pay the fines. "This puts us between a rock and a hard place," says David Cruz. "We're not on the list now, but do we start making changes? If we don't respond now and we get on there, we won't have a lot of time for compliance." As of May 9th, the Thunderbird mascot schools may have found a way to extend the deadline to fall into compliance an additional year by showing that the schools added to the list after 2021 would have an economic impact to the schools requiring more time to meet regulations. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
The Boulder City Council will hold its first reading today on a package of gun control measures, which includes reintroducing the ban on assault weapons. The proposed regulations also set to increase the age to possess a firearm to 21, prohibit open carry across most of Boulder, and impose a 10-day waiting period after a gun dealer starts a background check. According to the Boulder Reporting Lab, city lawmakers are hoping other local governments in the region will pass similar measures at the same time to offset pushback from pro-gun activists. The council's final vote on the gun control package is scheduled for June 7th. Students at Denver's North High School plan on staging a walkout on Friday in response to school district officials not renewing the contract of popular Chicano teacher Tim Hernandez. Hernandez, who grew up on the north side and lives within two blocks of the high school, teaches English language literature with a focus on Latinx writers. Hernandez told 9 News he dedicates his class to inclusion and making sure black and brown kids growing up in the school's gentrified neighborhood can have their voices elevated in the classroom. Denver Public Schools hired Hernandez as a traditional teacher during the 2020-2021 academic year, but for the current school year, only offered him an associate teaching position with a 1-year contract. Hernandez said he was told in a brief meeting last week he would not be on staff for the next school year, despite high performance scores due to interview responses that were deemed unsatisfactory. DPS told 9 News by email that associate positions do not qualify for automatic renewal, and the school district would not discuss the matter in depth as it involves a personnel issue. Hernandez said school officials let him go for retaliatory reasons. Parents and students are lobbying school administrators to keep Hernandez on staff. Today's weather includes sunny skies with highs in the 70s. Winds could gust as high as 16 to 24 miles per hour. There is a fire weather watch in effect today, which means critical fire weather conditions are forecasted to occur. The National Weather Service says the public should stay alert for later forecasts and possible red flag warnings. Tonight, skies will remain mostly clear with lows in the upper 40s, low 50s. The current temperature in Boulder is 45 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Fraser Meadows, an active retirement community in Boulder, opened a new exhibit yesterday. Celebrando Nuestra Cultura aims to bring awareness on the history of Latinos living in the state by featuring the stories of professionals, civil servants, and entrepreneurs in the present moment in the county, and displays pictures and bios of young students who are preparing to take up the baton of leadership. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with exhibit organizers Esther Matheson and Adeline Chavez.
How this exhibit idea came to be?
Well, it's been a year in the planning, and we decided that Fraser really needed to be more familiar and more acquainted with the Latino community out there. And so that meant that we would start in the spring from the exhibit and then develop the week-long activities. And it would just be lectures, and they would have activities, fiestas, and just to give them a pretty good overall picture of who we are as Latinos.
Esther, I have known you for a long time. Can you tell us about you? Because we want to know who you are.
Well, I have been in Boulder for over 50 years, and one of my passions is education. And education means that I am going to do what I can to help the Latino students in Boulder County. And so as a result, we have an organization that provides scholarships for Latino kids, and we're providing up to 60 scholarships a year for them. And they're graduating. We are so proud of them. This is my passion.
And you are well known because of the service that you provide for young people that want to further their education. There is a way of leveling the field, especially for us Latino community. I also have in studios Adilene Chavez. She comes also from the Fraser Meadows. You're younger, so I have not met you. It's so nice to have you here. Tell us about you. What do you do?
So I was brought in by Esther. She had a vision of us incorporating different events to showcase the Latino community at Fraser. For me, it really resonated because I am Latina. My parents are both Mexican. I'm Mexican American. I grew up in Boulder. I'm from Boulder. My whole family's here. And so to me, I think it's a great opportunity to showcase that a community that is willing to hear what we have to say and also to learn about the histories, what's going on now, and what the plans are for the future.
Why is this important to bring the past, the present, and the future of our community that has been present in Boulder County for a long time? Esther?
Well, it's important because they need to know that when the Latinos first started coming into Boulder County in the early 1900s, they were mostly involved in hard labor in the coal mines and the sugar beet industries, and it was hard work. It was probably the only ones who actually did this. It was just heartbreaking labor. The abuses in the labor force were pretty bad, and they did not really have a very good lifestyle. Then we moved to the present. Where are Latinos today? And the exhibit then will demonstrate that we have Latinos in every walk of life, and we have taken photographs of Latinos today in all areas, in categories like education, music and art, government, nonprofits. We have worked with the Latino Chamber of Commerce to bring in some of these people to us. I have a lot of contacts in the community as well. I was busy on the phone getting in touch with all of them, and they're in the areas of psychologists, there's professors, teachers, there are businessmen, restaurant owners, beauty shop owners, and we've taken pictures of them, and we have displaying them on posters in the present section. And then we have the future, where we have the organizations that provide scholarships for Latino kids. They themselves, each organization has showcased an outstanding student that they think is really going to go far.
For you, Adilene Chavez, as a young woman, as a young Latina, why is this extremely important to point out?
I feel like the exhibit just showcases where we come from and the obstacles that Latinos have faced in Boulder County. And for me, it's very empowering to see everything going on. Like you said, there's so many people in power that are of the Latino community. It opens the doors and it just lets you know that there's so much more that you can be doing. And also then looking to the future and to see everything that Esther and so many other organizations are doing to opening more doors for those kids and also just providing more opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise. And so I feel like anybody coming to see it, I think they'll appreciate where we've been and where we're going.
Esther Matheson, you have been in the community for a long time and you keep on, like you're saying, volunteering and giving from your energy. Why is this exhibit extremely important right now for people to see, and especially for you that you have put so much effort on it?
To see the progression of where they were when they came in to where they are now and where they're going does me so proud. I hear of these kids, you know, one is in a Channel 9 news team. Another one is a doctor now practicing. Another one is a successful restaurant owner. I mean, it just fills me with so much pride and so much, and it energizes me because I feel like we have made a difference and we are continuing to make a difference. And this is one way for these kids to fulfill their dreams. And in the Boulder County Latina League, where we offer scholarships, we call it on the wings of a dream, because that's where they're going. They're soaring into areas that they never dreamed they would accomplish.
I have been speaking with Esther Matheson and Adilene Chavez about the exhibit, Celebrando Nuestra Cultura, in English, Celebrating Our Culture. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
In many cases, new art forms are born from street culture, and many of those newer art forms were showcased at the Cinco de Mayo Festival in Longmont over the weekend, from custom-built lowrider bikes to airbrushed car detailing to hip-hop. After a very well-attended breakdancing tournament, I caught up with one of the organizers to ask about the role of the arts in mentorship.
Hi, my name is Tobias Lopez. I'm from Longmont, Colorado. I am in partnership with a bunch of community members here in Colorado who made this event possible. We have so many different dance studios here in Colorado. I'm part of BreakFX Productions, which is also a BreakFX dance crew. We're a local dance team that throws international dance events here in Northern Colorado, also Denver metro area. We've been established since 2019 as a production company and established as a dance team since 2006. We partner with a dance studio in Thornton called The Spot 2.0. There we offer free dance classes Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday to the public, ages 5 to 15. We are currently doing a circuit of events throughout the Denver metro area this season. Our next one will be in July. It's mostly going to be female focused, and the jam is actually called Femme Focused.
Tell me about what we just saw here. Where are we, and what did you do, and how many different dancers did you bring in for this?
Yeah, so we've extended the invitation to everyone on social media. The dance community comes together. We have people here from Atlanta, Columbia, Texas, Arizona, Las Vegas, and many other states that are also involved in this one. We have a lot of local dance teams that also showed up from Aurora, Colorado Springs, Boulder, Denver, Thornton, Longmont.
How were you able to bring so many people in to encourage them to travel to an event like this?
You know, we're starting to develop a lot of trust within the community. We're hosting safe space for children, women, even, you know, men to just be creative in an environment that's very competitive. We have been going at it since 2019. This was one of our first events in 2019. 2022, we're back where we started, and our following's just gotten bigger and bigger.
It was really amazing seeing how many kids were in the front line right around the dance space. Talk to me about the mentorship aspect of this.
Yeah, that's huge. You know, it's probably about five generations deep now. So hip-hop started in the late 70s, early 70s. That being said, it's kind of a sport where it's passed on through through legacy. A lot of these dance teams come from street dance teams, crews, and then now that we're starting to become more established and organized, a lot of the dance teams have now become dance studio owners, entrepreneurs, and they are now giving kids safe space to just be themselves within an environment that we never had growing up.
Speaking of the mentorship aspect, I mean, you can see physically there's some real veterans in the crowd as well as the five-year-olds in the front line. What is the span and how many are from Colorado?
Yeah, we had ages 5 to all the way to 40 plus that didn't let us know their age. But yeah, so the age range and the experience, the knowledge that gets passed, the torch that gets passed, it comes down to almost a tribal thing at the end of the day, where it's something where you teach your kin, it's almost in our DNA to kind of be able to express ourselves so sporadically through aerodynamic and acrobatic movements.
So people in the Denver metro area, Boulder, Longmont, wanted to find out more about this community and how to plug in, what would you say?
Yeah, you can follow us at BreakFX Crew on Instagram, The Spot 2.0, Generation B-Boy. We can point you in a dance studio in your location. There's dance studios in Colorado Springs, Aurora, Boulder, Denver. If you're even further out, we can try and find somewhere for you guys to get down.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
This is Water Words, a fast explanation of a bit of water lingo. I'm Hanalee Myers. Today's water word is prior appropriation. Prior appropriation is most often associated with water law, and Cornell Law defines it as a doctrine that uses a priority system, giving the first person to use or divert water for a beneficial use or purpose the ability to acquire individual rights to the water. The phrase most commonly used to explain prior appropriation is first in time, first in right. So under prior appropriation doctrine, which is how water rights are allocated in most of the Western United States, if a water user has a long history of putting flows to a beneficial use, for example, agricultural, industrial, or household use, that water user's right to that water is senior to the rights of anyone else who began using the water after them. In the West, where drought and water scarcity mean some years there might not be enough water to go around, a prior appropriation water rights system comes in handy to determine who gets the most water. Older, senior water rights get priority, while newer, junior water rights get what's left. One of the negatives to a prior appropriation system is water rights aimed at keeping water in rivers for recreation and the environment are almost always junior to older water rights for farming, industry, and development. So if you hear the term prior appropriation and think of a legal water rights system that gives those who have used the water longer more rights to the water than newcomers, that's it. That's prior appropriation doctrine.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and what's on the minds of listeners this week.
Hi, I've never called the comment line before, but would like to make 4 points. April 8th, Connections, hosted by Joel Edelstein regarding the war against Ukraine. Joel was speaking about Putin and began naming dictators by saying, and Daniel Ortega Nicaragua is trying his best to be a dictator. Joel isn't the only one who copies the narrative of corporate-sponsored media outlets and press releases out of the State Department. And NPR does this a lot with Nicaragua and Venezuela, without even having a reporter on the ground and speaking to people of elite status. And personally, I pay much attention to reports that speak to the poor or the indigenous, and few outlets do that. And point two, again, April 8th, the Morning Magazine ran a report by Rachel Cody about the Prison Radio Project. Following KGNU's mission statement, I'm glad that this project is happening and that these underrepresented voices were aired. However, painful to hear over and over again, over many news outlets, the voice of the person who brutally tortured and murdered my dear friend, Larry Martinez. While 95% plus people who are incarcerated will be released someday, I am hoping that Anthony Quintana isn't one of them and will use his skills to nurture the next cohort of those in prison. I wrote more about this on thenationreport.org. Point three, April 21st, Radio Nibbles, when John Lindorf mispronounced Ephraim and Shannon corrected him and he continued to mispronounce. Efrain used to be head cook of Señor Miguel when it existed next to Chateau on 28th Street. He pronounces his name Efrain, and the bigger point about that is that we need to respect how people pronounce their own names and not respect that by saying, this is Boulder. All of the vowels in Efrain's name exist in the English language, so there is no mystery nor talent needed to pronounce his name. And the last point I'd like to make is, thanks to La Lucha Sigue on Monday evenings for always including indigenous voices, and especially on their April 25th show about mining operations that are contaminating the Coyote River in Oaxaca and the march of indigenous peoples in Brazil to demand an end to illegal mining. Thanks for airing news in a half hour that we get nowhere else without extensive searches. You'd think that Ukraine was the only place in the world where extreme suffering is happening. Thank you. Oh, and thanks for all the new and young voices on the Morning Magazine. Thank you.
Fellow listeners, I am trying to understand why four-letter words are bleeped while cursing in the name of the Lord is acceptable. Comments, please. Thank you.
Yes, I've been listening to the Connections program this morning, Friday morning, and you know, I understand people are upset about the draft decision and the impact it's going to have on our country and where this all might be headed and whatnot. However, it just seemed to me the commentators were very just kind of resigned and well, this is all going to happen, and this fascist takeover, and everything is just destined, and there's not a lot of hope. So my comment is that, you know, we need to think about young people, and there are some sources of information like Midas and Heather Cox Richardson and other places where, yes, the problems are extreme, but there's hope. You know, Democrats can figure out some paths to take, because we actually do have the people and the numbers and morality on our side. So, and another thing is, you know, individual empowerment. You know, people have to stay empowered somehow. And I go back and forth, and I'm not trying to criticize anyone, but we have to find ways to be empowered and to help people stay empowered. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, James Swenson, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longobetter, and Hannah Lee Myers for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.